On October 12, 1958, at 3:37 a.m., 50 sticks of dynamite exploded in the walls of the temple, the oldest Jewish congregation in the city of Atlanta. The bombing was in response to the words and actions of the temple's social justice-minded rabbi, Jacob Rothschild. There were many in Atlanta who believed that the racial violence erupting across the country, particularly in the South, would never reach, quote, the city too busy to hate, a phrase coined by Atlanta's Mayor William Barry Hartsfield. But it did, on October 12, 1958. The damage caused by the bombing on the historic sanctuary situated on a grassy hill overlooking Peachtree Street was tremendous. Windows and doors were destroyed, brick walls were blown out like they were in a war zone. Most of the fineries were shattered and beat into dust. On the next Friday evening at the first Sabbath service after the bombing, Rabbi Rothschild stood up to speak. He looked at the overflowing crowd standing in the ruins of what was once a stately building, at people he had never seen or hadn't seen in some time. He let silence permeate the surroundings for a moment as he gazed into the eyes of those gathered on that evening before he said his first words. He said, "So, this is what it takes to get you to temple. Today's reading from Acts, we hear portions of Peter's sermon to the great crowds gathered for worship after another newsworthy event. In this case, not a bombing, but a miraculous healing. The first clause of the reading tells us that the people came in astonishment. Peter's sermon asks the question, "Why do you wonder?" And Peter's query points to a phenomenon that continues to baffle religious communities today. Why are there so many who come at times of great celebration or at times when many need to be comforted or when there is something astonishing taking place, but not as many at regular times, in the regular routine of life? Why do people come out for funerals and weddings or after catastrophic community events like 9/11 or the shootings in Newtown or the assassination of a leader, or in the case of the temple in Atlanta, when a sacred community building has been bombed? Why not at the other times? Or maybe a better question, what are we doing in these routine times that convinces people that attendance is optional? My initial feeling is that we often get into the pattern of things, so much so that it can seem like we won't miss much when we are gone, and that we will be able to jump right back into the life of a place like St. Patrick's, with little or no need to catch up. The mass of people gathered around Peter wanted to discover what they had missed, and Peter's sermon convinced many, if we go by the numbers that are reported later on in that section, 5,000. Peter convinced them they were missing what was right in front of them. Right in front of them, not just on that occasion of that healing, but all the time. Peter told those people, and he tells us, that finding God is a full-time, lifelong activity. And he said it's not an easy one. It actually requires risk and challenge. And if we were to disengage from that activity, we just might miss something that could transform our very being and even the nature of the human condition as a whole. Peter's words challenged the idea that religion was something reserved for a few hours a week. It was about applying God and prayer and ethics into all of our actions and choices. And that brings us to this series of discussions about race that we began today. This is a challenging topic. It is one that many would prefer and even suggest we avoid because it might just ruffle feathers. My work would be so much easier if we just swept the conversation away, kept up the regularness. Maybe we could have talked about loving our neighbors, collecting food for the hungry, or raising money for our partners in Haiti, all of which are very worthwhile causes, universally accepted as important. But they are action items that avoid the challenging things about looking in the core of our being. For a very long time, I convinced myself that I was colorblind. And as a result, I could tell myself that I was not part of the problem. I was part of the solution. But that inner voice is trapping me into maintaining the status quo. And my subconscious is okay with that because the system benefits me. It gives me a one-up. It's like Maurice was saying in the forum, I have the wind behind my back. I'm doing great. Long drive. Being called to responsibility for the injustice perpetrated by a cultural system, one that can seem impossibly complex, cultivates feelings of guilt that any person would naturally want to avoid. I mean, no one wants to feel the cloud of guilt, just as no one wants to feel the harshness of racism. After episodes in Ferguson, Missouri, and New York City in the latter parts of 2014, we held a discussion at St. Patrick's about racism. The sharing in the room on that Sunday morning was powerful. We heard from parishioners, people whom we love and know, who described everyday experiences in their lives when they felt the scourge of racism, sometimes even in this building. Others shared stories of when they lived into racist stereotyping. I knew right then that we needed to do something at St. Patrick's that would transform our collective life. But I knew that it would take more than just me standing on my soapbox. I was convinced that if we worked together to hear from each other about ways to address this issue, that we might just be transformed by the experience. That the love of God would resurrect in us something that would challenge us to learn about that very deceptive inner voice that convinces us that we are not part of the problem and that we are not part of the solution. We promise at baptism that with God's help, we will strive for justice and peace among all people and respect the dignity of every human being. It's a big promise, one that we need God's help. But we are failing to allow God to help us if we aren't exploring the power that our inner prejudices and biases and even the Darwinian survival mechanism have on our interactions with people who are different from us. If we operate under the mistaken notion that racism is a problem for those other people, those less enlightened than we are, and that the injustice of racism will correct itself if we allow enough time to pass, then we are passive minions of a social structure that will only change if everyone is willing to risk losing some inherent advantages. It's like what Brené Myers writes, being passive can yield the same results as being bigoted. I'm calling the people of St. Patrick's to be transformed. If someone were to re-enter our community after a long hiatus, I want them to notice that they are missing something. In order to make that happen, we must realize that God is calling us to explore how our faith intersects with every moment of our life, whether it is here at church or at home or at work or in school or in the park. God is everywhere, and if we spend some time digging deep into our inner reserve, we can strive for justice and peace and respect. And we can share love with reckless abandon. We can do our part to transform the collective injustice that can only be overcome if we all take it as our own personal responsibility. Listen to this traditional Franciscan blessing. May God bless you with discomfort at easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that you may live deep within your heart. May God bless you with anger at injustice, oppression, and exploitation of people, so that you may work for justice, freedom, and peace. May God bless you with tears to shed for those who suffer pain, rejection, hunger, and war, so that you may reach out your hand to comfort them and to turn their pain to joy. May God bless you with enough foolishness to believe that you can make a difference in the world, so that you can do what others claim cannot be done, to bring justice and kindness to all our children and the poor. We do all of this with God's help, but we've got to take a step too.